Wow. That's the first time I heard Billy Sue sing that. Wow. Thank you so much. Oh, my goodness. I think that the first rule of public speaking is never follow MFK Fisher or a piece of music like that. Fool that I am, here it goes. Quite near to us is a restaurant that some commentators that I have read have called simply the best restaurant in the world. I'm honored to say that I have dined there. Maybe some of the rest of you have as well. The restaurant is Thomas Keller's French Laundry in Yountville in the Napa Valley. Getting a reservation at the place can be a bear. I got to go with a well-connected former girlfriend and a couple of her rich friends. We had the 15-course tasting menu. The meal began with a miraculous amuse-bouche in the form of little ice cream cones made from rolled blinis and salmon tartare. Over the next 5 hours, a succession of astonishingly crafted and presented plates floated in and then floated away. And my girlfriend said afterwards that she started laughing after the 10th or 20th time my face lit up upon savoring an astonishing new flavor. There were oysters and caviar, a perfect little lobster ravioli, a pungently and smokily sauced piece of beef, a gorgeous fish called rouget, a positive slab of foie gras. Between courses were delivered sorbets infused with essences of fresh herbs to cleanse our palates. Dessert went on and on. I remember a tall serving tray with the best chocolate truffles tiered like Christmas ornaments. There was the menu, and then there were all the delicious little nibbles that came out just because. The service was not even just like a dance. It was a dance, precisely choreographed in a staged succession of solos, pas de deux, and grand production numbers with the full corps de ballet. The tables were gorgeous. The plates were gorgeous. Even the people were gorgeous. I felt gorgeous myself, even as I became progressively engorged. We left around 1 after my kind hostess paid the bill of $1,000 for a table of 4. I certainly left knowing that I had just eaten the best meal of my life. I've eaten many wonderful meals in name restaurants in big cities, in divine little rural waysides in America and France and Italy and Spain, meals of many cultural derivations. I've eaten brain and pancreas and raw shellfish and octopus and eel and pungent asafoetida-infused pickle from India, and I've enjoyed it all, variously. I'm not a fan of brain. But that French Laundry experience, as a dining experience, that was just, well, perfect. As some of you may know, Keller is famous for his obsessive perfectionism. He sources only the very best ingredients and rejects much. While many restaurant kitchens are frenetic and noisy, his has the hushed solemnity of an OR. Every server is trained and drilled in the dance. Yes, you pay a lot for dinner at the French Laundry, but when you do, you can count on a community of highly creative people doing everything in their power to give you simply the very best dining experience that it is possible to have within the bounds of this mortal coil. Or rather, best in one particular sense, as you'll shortly see. Well, it's a commonplace to say that we human beings don't just eat, we dine. We make of the dining table a canvas, a field, a painter's palette, a play space in which we grope our way to some vision or other of divinity and perfection. I'm sorry. We approach the dining table, I think, with a Platonic sense that there is a transcendent realm of perfect forms, the perfect set of china, the perfect burger, the perfect wine. And I suspect that we think that if we somehow get it all exactly right, we will be exalted, lifted up out of the mundane and transported. At the dining table, we grope our way back to the garden. Of all writers on food, M.F.K. Fisher captured this tendency best and did so again and again in the reading we just heard and in many other such pieces. And I trust and hope that all of you resonated with that reading and with this idea of the table as transcendent space, at least somewhat. All I really want to say here for my part is first that I really resonate with Fisher's story. I love that little story, even though I'm not that crazy about peas personally. I love that story. It's just so sweet and beautiful. Second, that there is clearly a right way and a wrong way to approach the table. I do admire Keller in the way that I admire anyone who achieves artistic and technical mastery. He's working in a rarefied world, but who among us is not proud of our spaghetti or fried chicken or chocolate chip cookies? I am an artist, someone who's keenly sensitive to beauty and sensual delights in all their forms. Art for me is a spiritual practice. But I recognize the mistaken tendencies of food hedonism. It is truly wrong in every way to indulge in profligate consumption, which I guess I just did, conspicuous or otherwise, or to become a food snob, which I define as a person who tries to score points by wowing everybody else with his or her gourmet acumen, which I probably also just did. Beautiful food can and should be simple and frugal food, and our UU values absolutely extol the virtue of living simply so that others may simply live. Plus, French Laundry experiences are only special if they're, well, special. I do confess, though, that I think the motto, everything in moderation, including moderation, is another value that we UUs can embrace. That said, as Fisher notes, there are several components to a transcendent experience at the table, and I'll talk about two. One is the component of the sensual pleasures of the food itself. Here we have to address the puritanical aspect of our heritage. I have a picture I want you all to look at. Susan's going to help me here. Look, you have to hit the space bar, honey. Sorry. And then pull the cloth back. I'm sorry. There we go. Get the lights down a bit. Isn't that great? Can you all see it? Okay, this is Saint Hilarion, and isn't that just the perfect name for him? It's in a painting by Dominique Papetti that's one of my favorites. It's a little risque, sorry about that. This guy never made it to the French Laundry. I can never decide for myself here which temptation is more seductive, the lovely Aphrodite on the one hand, or the fruit and wine on the little table there. We can adopt the ascetic's choice. Perhaps some of us do in various ways. We clearly must live responsibly with all creation, and I absolutely agree with commentators like Micah Pollan who help us to do so. But as for asceticism in general, I just think it's plainly the wrong way. Just think of how much, I mean, here's the irony. Just think of how much crust-gnawing Saint Hilarion and the most sensuous and dedicated glutton, on the other hand, have in common. They both are utterly in agreement about the importance, both symbolic and material, of the dinner table. They just go, you sort of take a different path. As usual, the middle way is the right one. Fisher writes simply, all people are hungry. They always have been. They must eat. And when they deny themselves the pleasures of carrying out that need, they are cutting off part of their possible fullness, their natural realization of life, whether they are rich or poor. Thank you, honey. So, my two points. First, there really is good and bad food. I wonder how many of you are as regularly disappointed in strawberries as I am. Do you agree that most supermarket strawberries usually highlight the straw rather than the berry? There's a guy, maybe some of you have visited him, who grows and sells organic strawberries on some acreage just north of 12 on the way to Sebastopol. Yeah. A few weeks ago at our house, we were having a party, so I picked up 3 baskets of plump, deep red strawberries. It was my first time visiting this guy. On the way home, I gave one to Noah and stuffed another one in my mouth, and I nearly ran us off the road. I got home and put the three baskets out on the kitchen island and gazed upon them in wonder. Three whole baskets of these incredible, precious, oh, so fleeting gifts from the earth. What a sin it must seem to our Creator that so miraculous a food has been rendered so uneatable by mass production. So many other foods share this fate. Don't even get me started on tomatoes. So yeah, here I guess I am of the Keller and Fisher camp. Food products themselves can verge on the perfect. And it is our blessing and gift sometimes to have the grace of beautiful and perfect strawberries. But, of course, beautiful food itself is hardly the end of the story. As I hinted earlier, my French Laundry experience was the best meal of my life, only really in that artistic sense. But there were many meals that I remember more fondly. There was that Thanksgiving in grad school when several of us who were far from our families got together for an exile's holiday. All of us poor, we drank middling wine and roasted the turkey upside down because none of us had ever roasted a turkey before. We laughed together, missed our families like crazy, and loved each other just for being there. Or there was that first fish I grilled for Susan, that first visit she made to my house. Yeah, that was a distinctive meal. Or there was that beautiful pizza Susan's family and I shared at the end of this last Christmas holiday when the busyness of the season was past and we all let down our guards and shared what we really thought and felt about each other and about the world. We all know that there's more to a great meal than great food. But with Fisher and her peas, I insist that great food helps. That was good pizza we had. The word I'm groping after is communion, of course. Excuse me. Communion can happen. Maybe it always does happen anytime we break bread in the presence of others. Food brings down the walls that divide us, one from each other and one from the world. As a sentimental old fool, I love the 23rd Psalm, and my favorite line in it is the one that goes, "Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies." For a long time, I thought that the line was saying that in heaven, I would get to eat a lavish dinner while all my enemies have to look on, famished and drooling. And it seems, actually, that most translators think that that's what the psalmist is saying. Maybe it is, I don't know. But I don't think that's it. I think the psalmist's vision of heaven here precisely says that heaven will be that place where we all, friends and enemies, the young and old, the gifted and poor, the bold and the meek, will have a place at a table groaning with beautiful dishes. Judas was not evicted from the communion table. Here's a reading of that first communion that I like. Sure, there was bread and wine, as we all know. Surely, there was beautiful fish from the sea or the river, too, and there were doubtless olives and cheese and pomegranates and dates and some sort of juicy fruit and something green. I even picture a chicken or two, maybe, or maybe some goat or lamb stewed beautifully with currants and spices or something. And what about the bread and wine, okay? Those of us who grew up Christians of a mainstream stripe can't help but picture the stale, tasteless crackers they fed us during the Eucharist. Nonsense, I say. There are delicious leavened or unleavened breads easily made from many different grains. Do we think that when Christ turned the water into wine at the wedding feast at Cana that he made rotgut? It's unthinkable to me. At the very least, I picture a beautiful Beaujolais Village. Seriously. What really mattered ultimately at that first communion, why the followers of Christ remembered it as so significant and powerful a moment, was not only the quality of the food. For the disciples, I have to believe, that last meal of Christ gave them the vision of paradise that they needed to carry forward after their leader had perished. It was one of those rarest of rare suppers when you feel in every bite the fleeting speed of time. When you know that this gathering, these people, are indeed to be known and loved as well as our parents and our children, when the beauty of the people, the food, the moment, and the laden table itself turn every bite into a sacrament. Then the barriers that divide us from each other and from the world that sustains us fall away, and we live as we were meant to live in this moment right here. Amen.